And news with Nick, December 18th, 2015. I was really freaking trying to get the date right the first try, but so be it. Things will not happen correctly anymore. It is the Star Wars release edition of Nick's News with Nick. And Friday edition, which means it is Fedora Friday, even though sometimes I wear the fedora not on Friday, and it might not even be called a fedora. So, who's to say what things are? We're going to have a sip of beer. Mm-mm. That is some warm, coffee-tasting beer that we got going. Okay, folks. News with Nick again. Like I said, it is Star Wars edition. Last night, Star Wars released across the globe. People staying up till midnight on Thursday in line to get into the new Star Wars and watch it. So I didn't. I have no clue what happened. It's kind of going to be risky to go to any place on the internet. Well, here's the thing. Think about this. Normally, spoilers are pretty well handled. It's kind of like, it's one of the most respected things, I think. For example, Breaking Bad. Like, I watched the last episode of Breaking Bad a day after it came out. Didn't see anything about it. And I go to a lot of sites. I go to this site. I go to Reddit. I go to Freddit. and other things. It's kind of like spoilers are just one of those things you don't do, even if you had like if you had a worst enemy and you really wanted to get him, you can go up to him and be like, you know, Darth Vader is Leia's dad. Remember when Darth Vader had Leia on the bed? And she was like, oh, Darth Vader, don't do it to me. And he's like, I can't. I'm your father. I don't know. I think that, wait, that might have been a fan fiction. Anyway, the point is nobody breaks the spoiler code, it seems. It's pretty interesting. It's like, even if your worst enemy's a man, if you're a man, you don't go up and, like, hit him in the balls, right? So you don't go up to a man and say, here's a Star Wars spoiler, here's a Breaking Bad spoiler, even if they're your worst enemy and you hate them. Weird, right? Can't wait to see that new lightsaber that has the two lightsabers going out the side. There's the one main one, and then it's like, you know how pirates have those hand guards that guard the top of their hand, or maybe that's any sword. Anyway, it has those little things that go off, but you put jewels on them, or mouse skulls or something. Anyway, in Star Wars, they just have two mini lightsabers that go off to the side so that if you scrape yourself with it, you cut off your own wrist. Although, I suppose those could just be for show, right? They could have just put a non-energized light there. So if they can make a light, they could make a non-energized light, right? It's just like, here's my fake lightsaber. Oh, what if they had that in Star Wars universe, and people were walking around with the fake lights, but then cops would go around with their real lightsabers and cut them up, and then it'd be like, he was unarmed! And it's like, oh, I don't know, it was a 12-year-old black kid carrying a fake lightsaber that just did the light but didn't have the cut ability on it. How are we supposed to know? And they're like, well, it had an orange tip. I'm like, I couldn't tell, it's a lightsaber. They all have orange tips. Wow, okay. I don't know. So that's Black Lives Matter in the Star Wars universe, I guess. Oh, so I was watching the old Star Wars. So I've decided that probably the old Star Wars are just as silly and stupid as the new Star Wars, meaning the new ones, episodes 1, 2, and 3, that everyone loves to hate. Like, oh, man, those are the worst Star Wars. I hate everything. I don't even count those as real movies. The old ones are like, those are pretty stupid, too. So think about it. So at the end, spoilers of Return of the Jedi, if you've never seen it. All right, so at the end of this Return of the Jedi, Darth Vader and the Emperor and Luke are all hanging out in a restaurant or something. And then Emperor's like, Luke, I can't believe you tipped the waitress that much. And he like zaps him with his lightning. And then Darth Vader goes, no! And Darth Vader stops the Emperor from shocking Luke with the lightning. But Darth Vader gets a little shock in the process, right? And then he goes, oh, I'm hurt. And then Luke says, no, don't die, father. And he's like, I have to. Take off my mask. Anyway, but they're on the Death Star, right? And Darth Vader's like the leader of the Death Star. Darth Vader and the Emperor are like the leaders of the Death Star. How many people must work on the Death Star? 100,000 minimum? There's nobody that you could be like, hey, medical team, the leader is hurt. Can you get down here? Yeah, I understand that they were in a fight or a war or something, but, or like a battle, probably not a war. But you're like, the leader's hurt. Isn't that the point of being a leader? Is that all the other people, I don't know. They rebuilt him once because he all got cut up to pieces. They can't fix him because he got a little bit of a shock. Wow. It makes no sense. So the whole thing doesn't make any sense, and it's a pretty big movie for some reason, and I'm 100% sure that whole reason is that back in the day, I read about this, that back in the day when Star Wars first came out, there were no Netflix, there were no DVDs, there were not even really VHSs. If you saw Star Wars, you saw it in the theater, and then how great Star Wars was just in your memory, and then you went to the store and bought little action figures and made them run around and fight. But other than that, it was like, I don't know, I saw Star Wars, but I can't see it again right now, and then I remember it as being amazing, because I'm 10. So 20 years later, 15 years later, when the prequels come out, you go, oh, what? That doesn't seem as amazing. I don't know. Maybe I'm dumb. Let's see what the chat's saying. Nothing. Nobody's in the chat. Anyway, if you're missing the video version of the show, it is being recorded, and we are going to try to post that on the PCL. So go to pukeinthegang.com. Click log into your PCL account, of course, and then click into the episode that's Mark News with Nick, and then you can watch the video version where we do video version-y stuff. First topic of the day. I went to court for an activist. I am now an activist again, and I will soon be topless downtown, so look for that, holding a sign that says free the black nipple or black nipples matter or something like that. Oh my god, black nipples matter. Anyway, so I went to court because I had a day off, so I'm like, well, one of the guys we know is in court, James Cleveland. He's been on this show before. Or not the news show, but he's been on the Puke in the Gang. So I decided that I'm gonna take a day off. I'm gonna head down to court. Doop 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 doop. Head down to court. Right. Takes like forever to get anything going. Oh, all the jurors come in, and I'm like, hey, I think I know that guy as one of the jurors. And then they're like, well, we're not starting the trial yet. What we're gonna do is we're gonna go for a viewing. I'm like, okay. So we all. All the jurors get on this bus, right? We leave court, they get on a bus, we have to get into our car, and then we go to another place in town where we actually walk around like a building, and then the two lawyers are just like, hi, I want you to take note of this door and this tree and this distance between the door and the tree, and this is a red door, and then this a platform, and then also look over here at this handicap sign, right? And this post, and here's building 13, and here's building 7. And I go, oh, building 7? We're doing a 911 investigation over here. Anyway, it's completely retarded. You have to, apparently, they wanted the jury to memorize everything, which would be impossible. So we get back to court, and then testimony starts on, basically, James is at trial, James is at trial for having entered an area, being told by police to leave the area. James didn't want to leave the area. He wanted to continue to record. And then he was arrested for such. So they spent the first, like, hour and a half, 2 hours, 2.5 hours of the trial not describing what James did, but describing what the other guy did that James was trying to film. And I think they were doing this to establish a dangerous situation so the jury could be like, oh my goodness, it's so dangerous. James definitely shouldn't have been there. He was disorderly for being there. Okay. They do the second half of the day. We go to lunch. We do the second half of the day where they actually show the video of him being arrested, play some audio. I get yelled at by the judge for talking and making faces in court. Apparently, you can't do that. If you make a face, you could influence the jury because they might be looking at your face and going, oh, man, that guy with the fedora, he really knows what he's talking about. And if he made a face, I must make a face. Anyway, I don't know. Long story short, doesn't conclude that day, so I go back to work the next 2 days. And the trial concludes the second day, but the jury goes to the deliberation rooms, and they're like, oh, we can't figure it out. We're going to come back the next day, which is amazing, by the way. Usually the way this works is, a trial ends. Say the trial ends at 3. Jury gets into the deliberation room, 3:15. They go, okay, guys, I got to pick up my kids in like 45 minutes, so can we hurry up and make this guilty? That's insane. We need to find a better way to do this. We need to have people that are like, I don't know. Like, how do you find a jury that doesn't have other things on their mind to get out of a room, right? Everyone's got jobs. Everyone's got kids they got to pick up. What are you supposed to do? And then these people are like, they're going to make a decision sometimes based on how much time they have left in the day. Anyway, surprisingly, they don't. Right? Had they made a decision right away, they probably wouldn't have had to come back another day. But, and maybe some of them wanted to do that. But the thing with this court system is you got to have all 12 people. So they can't come to a decision, they come back the next day, right? They still can't come to a decision after 5 hours of deliberating. They actually do vote not guilty on one of the charges, which was resisting arrest, which cops love to slap resisting arrest on you if they reach for you and you don't immediately go, yes, master, and then make your arms go limp, but don't make your legs go limp because that would definitely be resisting. But you turn in the exact, like if someone grabs you, right? You're going to be like, ah, don't grab me, right? That's the response. And then they go, you're resisting. And then they beat you with their fake lightsaber. Oh, my God. What if all those batons came in, like, lightsaber shape? Anyway. They said he took, like, 2 steps back and then said no. And then that was resisting, even though he immediately let himself be cuffed. So I don't know. Anyway, they voted not guilty on that, so that's pretty good. And they were tied 6-6 on his disorderly conduct charge. So it's a mistrial, and he gets to go to trial again if the prosecution wants to, and he gets to pay for a whole new lawyer. Michael Vick advocating for bill to help police rescue animals from hot cars. Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback Michael Vick was present Tuesday at the Pennsylvania House of Representatives in an effort to encourage voters to pass the animal rights bill. According to ESPN.com's blah, 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 PA House bill, oh, here it is. PA House Bill 1516 would allow police officers to rescue dogs or cats from vehicles should the temperature inside reach an unsafe temperature. And, of course, if you guys don't follow Sportgrams, Sportsies, Michael Vick is that guy that was a quarterback and he was real crazy and great. And then they were like, oh, wait a minute. Why do you have a bunch of, like, dog rings, dog fighting rings running at your house? And he's like, I don't know. They just broke in and started using my house for dog fighting. And they're like, I don't think so. Why do the people in the house say that you let him in and then that you gave him money and you were bankrolling the dogfighting operation? He goes, oh, sorry. I didn't know. I'm from the South. In 2007, Vic was sentenced to 23 months in prison for his role in a dogfighting ring, ultimately serving 19 months, blah, blah, blah. Since then, Vic has worked with the Humane Society and fought for the passage of a federal law in 2011 that punished those who brought minors to and unknowingly attended animal fights. Wow, why would they care if people who mine gold are there? Not funny. I know I'm an unlikely advocate, Vic said. I was part of the problem. Now my perspective can help reach people that activists can't reach. I can help others become agents for change. So does he really care about dogs, or is he like, is he like, oh man, everyone really hates me. I better do something nice for like a dog or a cat.
Hey, I'm Tyron Matthew with PETA, showing you what happens when you leave a
Oh, crap.
Dog in the car on a hot day. It's 90 degrees outside today. I'm sure it's going to get.
You know how Chrome has that download thing that you can tell what someone downloaded in the bottom of the screen? I had that up the whole time on the recording. Well, guess the secret's out on.
Get a whole lot hotter.
All the porn I've been downloading.
Inside of that car.
This is a video. This is a video where they put a NFL player in a hot car and pretend he's a dog.
This is ultimately what it feels like to be a dog trapped inside of a car on a hot day while they're.
Oh my goodness, they had the Chevrolet logo blurred out even though it was obviously a Chevrolet logo.
The owner is probably in a grocery store, so the dog has to sit in the car and literally overheat.
He's flapping his shirt. It says, time in car, 4 minutes. And it's 105 degrees F. 105 degrees F. He's wiping his brow using his shirt. That's what I do when I'm running.
I couldn't imagine leaving my dog in a car like this. I mean, if you're going to make a dog a part of your family, then make him a part of your family. Don't treat him like you wouldn't treat someone you cared about.
Well, this is propaganda. Not that it's not correct, but I'm just going to... Like, it's just him talking about, oh, man, it's hot. If you love a dog, don't ever leave him in a car. If you're going to get a dog, I don't know, put a fan on his face or something. I don't know what he's going to say, but... Okay, let's see. How long is this bill? Cruelty to animals. Leaving animal in unattended motor vehicle, the following shall apply. In addition to any other penalty provided by law, a motor vehicle owner or operator commits a summary offense if the motor vehicle owner or operator confines a dog or cat in an unattended motor vehicle in extreme heat, endangering the dog's or the cat's health and well-being. 2. A person who witnesses an act under paragraph 1, which paragraph 1 was leaving the dog or the cat in the car, person who witnesses an act under paragraph 1. Oh, by the way, ferrets, not protected. Ferret lives matter, right, everyone? A person who witnesses an act under paragraph 1 may contact a police officer, a volunteer, or professional fireman, a humane officer, security guard, or other first responder, any security guard, who may take any action to safeguard the dog or cat, including but not limited to breaking into the motor vehicle to remove the dog or cat from the unattended motor vehicle after a reasonable effort to search for the owner or operator of the unattended motor vehicle. So you can't just see a dog, take your hammer, and then break into the car and get the dog out. You have to have made a reasonable effort to search for the owner, which probably, I would say that means you put an announcement on the store, right? 3. A police officer, volunteer, or professional fireman, humane officer, security guard, or other first responder in the department or agency employing the officer is not liable for any damage to property resulting from actions taken under this section. If the dog or cat is removed from the motor vehicle, the person removing the dog or cat shall. Okay, so if you remove a dog or cat using this law, this is what you have to do. 1. leave a note in the motor vehicle or in a conspicuous location stating the person's name and contact information and information as to where the dog or cat can be located. And, 2, take the dog or cat to a veterinary hospital or animal care clinic for treatment and health screening. The dog or cat shall then be admitted to a shelter or a humane society if the motor vehicle owner or operator is unable to be located. Okay, so if you remove the dog or cat, you have to bring it to a animal hospital, it says. What if you take it out and then the owner comes back and says, oh my God, you just broke my window. And it's like, sorry, the law. Even if he says, okay, the law, you've already taken the dog out. Now, by law, you're required to take the pet to a veterinary hospital. It's like, I have to follow the law. And the owner's like, no, I don't want to go to the vet. He's fine. Weird. I don't think people writing laws are vets. Maybe they should have consulted some vets before they wrote that one. Let's see. Citadel Military College in South Carolina has completed an initial investigation into the students who wore pillowcases resembling the Ku Klux Klan hoods in photos posted to social media last week. The school announced Wednesday that it has suspended 8 cadets involved in the incident. The school explained that 8 students were temporarily suspended and will be allowed to take final exams, but they won't resume normal classes with the rest of the cadets until January 13th. All 8 cadets involved in the incident provided statements to the school during the course of the initial investigation. Once they return to classes in January, a formal administrative hearing will take place where the cadets will answer questions from department officials. Let's watch this video. Hey, guess what, guys? Adblock Plus installed. No more ads before videos. I'm sorry that I'm stealing from content providers, I guess, but I don't know. If you're gonna spam my show with your autoplays, this is what you get. I won't play.
One Photograph has launched suspension proceedings for several students at South Carolina Military College, the Citadel. Here is the photo you can see for yourself here. This is taken from Facebook. It shows 7 cadets wearing over their head white pillowcases, pointed tops, eyes cut out. You get it. Victor Blackwell is following this one for us. Victor, what was going on there?
Well, maybe Bed Bath & Beyond shouldn't be selling white pillowcases if they don't want people to use it for Ku Klux.
Well, Brooke, I think the similarities are clear between what they're wearing and the typical garb worn by members of the Ku Klux Klan. The question is, was that what was in...
So at work, we have these tools, and normally the tools are identified by a number, like a 5-digit number. But for certain types of tools, they're identified by a 1, 2, or 3-digit letter, right? And so we have a tool that is perforation KKK or triple K. Whenever anyone asks me if I've seen KKK, which has only happened once or twice, unfortunately. But anyway, if anyone ever asks me where triple K is, I go, I think I saw it out back. There's this white sheet it's under, and you've got to, like, lift it up and find perf triple K under that. And they're going to be like, oh, okay, I'll go look for that, because they're not going to get it. But
intended here. And you think back, the military college, the Citadel, has had some accusations of racism and discrimination in the past. About 30 years ago, the FBI investigated after several upperclassmen dressed in white sheets and pillowcases rushed into the room of a cadet, a black cadet, shouting racial slurs and burning a cardboard cross. But we have to also consider that there are other possible explanations. Let me read for you first the statement that came from the president of the Citadel, Lieutenant General John Rosa. He found the photograph offensive, disturbing. Here's part of his statement. In accordance with the college policy, we immediately began suspension proceedings for those cadets known to be involved, and we're continuing to investigate this incident. Preliminary reports are cadets were singing Christmas carols as part of a Ghost of Christmas Past skit. These images are not consistent with our core values of honor, duty, and respect. The Citadel is investigating, and the president...
Goodness, okay, whatever. Recommendations for any disciplinary action will be made to the college president at the conclusion of the hearing. So they've been suspended, but then they have to come back from suspension and then go to hearing and then hear more about their disciplinary action. Okay, I get it. Maybe that's poor judgment to wear a white suit and a pillowcase. But at the end of the day, they didn't burn any things. They didn't burn anything. They didn't hang anyone, right? Like, you just wore a pillowcase. It should be like, oh my goodness, you're fine. You're suspended for 2 days. Don't do that again. Right? I don't know. Doesn't seem that bad. All right, let's get into the lightning round. I don't know. We haven't done very many stories yet. Putin.
It is not.
Whoa, that was loud. Putin praises bright and talented Trump. Donald Trump has said that he would get along very well with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The feeling is apparently mutual.
Often the Russian president offers praise to any American, but today he did. He gave a big old shout out to Donald Trump. Here's some of what Putin said.
He is a brilliant and talented person without a doubt, but it is not our right to identify his virtues. It is the prerogative of the U.S. voters. He is the absolute leader in the presidential debates as we see it.
Okay, so there you have it. Donald Trump on his...
Is that news? That Vladimir Putin said, well, Donald Trump's pretty cool. He is a bright and talented person without any doubt, Putin said, adding that Trump is an outstanding and talented personality. Okay, cool. Glad that was in the lightning round, so who cares about that? Professor to be fired for harassing family of Sandy Hook massacre victim. Is this video going to play something too? But it won't play an ad. Federal prosecutors have decided to bring criminal charge. Oh, wait, hang on. My bad. A Florida Atlantic University professor is in the process of getting fired after allegedly harassing a family of a child who died in the Sandy Hook massacre. You know what? I would call it not allegedly harassing a family of a child who died. I would say harassing a family of a child who allegedly died. Right, everyone? Sandy Hook's fake. James Tracy, associate professor at the School of Communication and Multimedia Studies, has brought negative attention to the university since 2013. He wrote on his private blog, Memory Hole, that the Sandy Hook massacre was staged. Let's click on over to Memory Hole. Oh my goodness. Okay, so Memory Hole. Sorry, I was zooming in a little bit for the video viewers. Reflections on Media and Politics, memoryholeblog.com. Sandy Hook Massacre, 3 years of subterfuge and fraud. What's a subterfuge? Is that something you put in like a sump pump? 3 years ago, the public learned of the most significant mass shooting in recent U.S. history involving the deaths of 20 young school children and 7 adults. I don't think 7 adults were involved at all, right? I thought maybe it was. Oh, involve? No. Well, I'm dumb because I don't know even how many people are allegedly dead. I thought it was like 1 or 2 adults. Anyway, as a father of 3, I immediately empathized with the parents, reminding myself there was no real way to fathom the sense of loss such an experience must involve. After several days of reflection, however, my instincts as a media analyst took charge. In reviewing news footage of the Sandy Hook massacre, I began to recognize very unusual features in the alleged forensics, the emergency response, and their overall way the event was being reported. Now I have to click this button that says more. Commonplace emergency protocols were abandoned. There were no surge of EMTs into the building, no proper triage protocol employed, or Med-Eye evac helicopters called. Parents were not even allowed to view and hold the bodies of their deceased children. Ooh. And law enforcement oddly admonished those who questioned the official narrative online were subject to criminal prosecution. The following day, Connecticut State Coroner amazingly bumbled and guffawed through a 15-minute press conference where it was anticipated he would provide an expert overview of the postmortem. His response to reporters' questions were so bizarre and incompetent. I was awaiting an avalanche of lawsuits from victims' family to be brought against the school district. Do we have footage of this? Oh, yeah, I remember this guy.
First of all, on behalf of my wife and my sons, and on behalf of my other family.
He's like an insane, crazy man, and he just happens to have been brought in to be the coroner of Sandy Hook.
To the families and everyone else who has been so hurt by this event, our thoughts and our prayers are with you. The office chief medical examiner got here, actually the chief medical examiner, got here a couple hours after the building was secured.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember seeing this. He does, like, a lot of laughing for no reason. Like, he might be insane. If you're a coroner, aren't you insane by default? Like, wouldn't you turn insane after, like, a week? Like, oh, my goodness, I'm insane now. There's so many deads.
Preliminary identification.
All right, let's skip ahead.
All victims at some point, whether they were with us last night or on the job today, and are...
Let's skip ahead to the question and answer section.
Bringing the bodies and the families into contact. We took pictures of them, of their facial features. You have it's easier on the families when you do that. There is a time and a place for up close and personal in the grieving process. But to accomplish this, we felt it would be best to do it this way. And you can sort of... you can control the situation depending on your photographer, and I have very good photographers.
Oh my goodness. He's just like, oh, I have very good photographers. He's getting a question.
No, I don't.
How young?
Sorry, I don't.
How young was the youngest victim, doctor, and how old was the oldest victim?
Yeah, he is. Okay, I think he's probably just an insane man and unfortunately got put on the spot. He still probably does a great job as a coroner, right? He just, that's, his skill is not public speaking. Anyway, back to the base story. We could do Sandy Hook stuff all day long. Maybe we'll do Sandy Hooks with Nooks with Nick at some point. Anyway, FAU reprimanded this professor, but only because he didn't make it clear that his conspiracy theory was separate from that of the university's. Last Thursday, parents of a child killed in the Sandy Hook massacre decided to speak out in an editorial. Verona Kay and Lenny Posner, whose son Noah died at Sandy Hook, said Tracy was harassing them, demanding evidence that Noah lived with them and that they were his parents. So he's basically calling and going, I heard your son died. Prove it. Prove he even existed. Prove you even had a son. They said they didn't when they didn't respond, Tracy subjected us to ridicule and contempt, boasting to his readers that the unfulfilled request was noteworthy because he had used copyright claims to thwart continued research of the Sandy Hook massacre event. Oh, because we had used copyright claims. Tracy even went so far as to claim the parents made off well financially from the tragedy, soliciting contributions from generous yet misinformed Americans where the families have averaged more than $1 million apiece. He also said that Noah's death certificate was revealed as a fabrication. Okay. It would suck if Sandy Hook really was fake and then all these people saying it are like, I know. But to question that like, a child died is like, you're an insane person, I guess. I don't know what to tell you. If you want more information, head on over to, where'd it go? Head on over to memoryholeblog.com, and what you'll see at the top there is San Bernardino shooting, what really happened behind the scenes. After a week of whitewashed reports and media-scripted ransacking of the alleged shooter's home, and eyewitness accounts that contradict the official narrative, we also learned that in the very room where 14 people were reportedly killed during a deadly shooting attack in the Inland, there was an active shooter training drill involved some of the victims almost a year before the attack. I don't know, folks. I guess San Bernardino, that was fake, too. Speaking of San Bernardino, neighbor of San Bernardino shooters to be charged. Crap, that was about to start, like, right on time and be actually...
We have some new information this morning tied to the San... shooting, federal prosecutors have decided to bring criminal charges against the man who purchased some of the rifles that were actually used in that attack. Let's turn now to NBC Justice correspondent Pete Williams. Pete, tell us more.
Matt, good morning. Several federal law enforcement officials tell NBC News that the first criminal charges to stem from the San Bernardino mass shootings could be filed as early as today. Officials say the charges will be brought against Enrique Marquez, a longtime friend and former.
Okay, so the picture they have of here is of him giving a very big smile in his glasses. Federal prosecutors have decided to bring criminal charges against the friend and former neighbor of one of the San Bernardino shooters. Several federal law enforcement officials tell NBC News that the first criminal charge... investigators have said Marquez bought the two assault rifles 3 years ago that wound up being used in the shooting. Officials say Marquez told them that he did it as a favor so that Farouk would not have to go through a background check or be on record as the purchaser. Of course. All right, guys, if any Muslim ever comes up to you and goes, yo, can you please buy me gun? Don't be like, sure, okay? Actually, don't do that for anyone. Because then if they use it, then you go, oh, no, they use the guns. This guy actually called 911 either during the shooting or right after the shooting. He called 911 and said, oh, my goodness, I bought them the guns. They're going to be able to trace it back to me. I guess if you realize your guns have been used in a terrorist attack, his goal was, like, get out in front of it and be like, I know, sorry, guys. Don't put me in jail for too long. Yeah, he's kind of screwed. Can you imagine? The guy who bought guns for a terrorist attack is now under fire and going to be going to court. Okay, that was not a very lightning round there. So let's move on to one of the best stories of the week, actually. When the call came into a windowless bunker on High Street, the Red Line dispatcher swiveled around to the supervisor on the platform behind him. Wait a minute. So imagine you're in an office in a windowless bunker, right? He swiveled around to the supervisor on the platform behind him. Why are the supervisors on platforms? I'm the supervisor, and I will stand up on this platform and oversee you. He goes, I have an emergency here. In an instant, the two men were side by side staring up at the two-story wall of video screens and real-time maps, an unattended train, a moving blip of LED numbers, and potential disaster was rumbling through Quincy Adams Station 4 miles down the line. Another train, its operator unaware, was stopped at Wollaston, letting passengers on and off. The men knew they had 10 minutes, maybe, to stop the runaway train, clear the line, and avoid the kind of collision nobody wanted to picture. Cutting the power to the entire Braintree branch would mean stranding other trains just as rush hour was approaching. The operator of a Red Line train that took off from Braintree without him Thursday had apparently rigged a cord inside around a throttle used to control the train's movement and also failed to set the brake before exiting the vehicle. State and federal officials launched an investigation after the driverless train sailed through 4 stations in more than 5 miles with about 50 passengers on board. On Friday, Governor Charlie Baker and state transportation officials vowed to avoid a similar situation in the future and sought to portray the incident as unacceptable. Please, everyone, look at this incident. It is unacceptable. Trust me. Unacceptable, but highly unusual. Caused by several errors. We all understand the fear, the shock, the surprise that those 50 people have experienced. So basically, they're on the train, right? And they're floating along, because that's what trains do, right? They float. Anyway, the train's going along from one station, and it goes through the next station, and people are like, wait, we're supposed to stop there. That's weird. And then the people in the front of the train, because normally you can peer through this window and you can see a little man that hates his life driving the train in front. They look through and they're like, there's no one in the driver's seat. And the train's just going. Like, oh my goodness. Like, what would you do? I'd start going insane immediately. I would be breaking windows even though there's the emergency pull. Or I'd pull that, I guess, and I'd try to jump. like, what? If I know the train's going... and I know there's no driver, I assume we're going to crash, right? So at that point, I am pulling that emergency opener, and I am finding a place, even though we're going 25 miles an hour possibly, that's not that fast, right? You can almost run 25 miles an hour. So say you can run full out sprint 16 miles an hour. So if you full out sprint in the other direction and then you land, it's only like landing at 10 miles an hour. I don't know math or physics. Yeah, I'd be looking for a place to jump. Sorry, and I'd be risking it. So they look out, there's like no driver and the train's just going. The unmanned subway train is the latest in the string of controversies. An agency still struggling to regain public confidence after it faltered amid last winter's historic snows. Oh, who cares? Okay, so basically what happened is that the operator of the train, A, they've got these little levers in the front of the train, and the lever controls how fast the thing goes. But simultaneous to the lever having to be pulled, similar to like a stick shift in a car, the lever also has to be physically pushed down at all times. It's like on a seesaw kind of thing. So it has to be pushed down, and then it also has to be pulled to the correct position. The thing is, these people don't want to use their forearm muscles all day long. So they take a cable or a belt or something, and they just, I'm just going to tie down the stupid thing. The point of that lever is that if it's not being pushed down, it means you died or passed out or you're not in the driver's seat, right? So the train can't go. But we're people and we like to take shortcuts. So he ties down the lever. Then he forgets to set the brake. Then he goes outside of the train to do something. I think what you have to do is you have to set this manual switch. I think what happened is one of the signals failed. So the signal was saying yellow or red when the signal should have said green. He was getting an okay from traffic control that the line was clear, but the signal was not changing. Now, the train can't go if the signal's not changed, so you have to actually get out of the train, do this manual switch that'll allow the train to go, and then get back in. So he gets out of the train to do the manual switch. When he does the manual switch, he didn't put the brake on, and that lever's still engaged. So the train starts going, and he's like, oh my goodness. Can you imagine? You're the train operator. You switch it, and then you just watch the train go. Like, uh-oh. That's not good. Couldn't you have immediately just jumped on? If you started to see it go, wouldn't you have, like, grabbed on? Or would you just be like, oh, I don't know, I don't get paid enough for this. Guess the train's gone. They immediately radioed the train at Wollaston, which is the train ahead of the runaway train, and the other one ahead of it, which I guess a whole branch is 8.8 miles, and told them to, quote-unquote, run express, making no stops, and just go. Get off the line, right? And then they decided how they're going to stop the runaway train. Even in quiet moments, the MBTA's Operation Control Center looks like a Hollywood set. But now the darkened room was alive with crackling drama. The supervisor and the dispatcher had 48 years of MBTA experience between them, but neither had game planned for this. Nobody had. Of the millions of radio and phone calls that had come in over the 45 heist, not one had ever carried a report of a runaway train tearing down the tracks. Just a minute earlier, the same dispatcher had fielded a radio call from the operator of the Red Line train in question, telling him that there was a signal problem. He knew it was safe to proceed, but the display on the dash and the traffic light signal was not switching. Using a radio that looks like an old-fashioned telephone handset, the train operator had called from the cab to ask for permission to climb down and flip the manual bypass, which is what I just told you about. This would allow him to move the train forward despite the signal system failure. From the desk of the control center, adorned only with a feeling stressed ? Card carrying the number for the MBTA employee relaxation line, the dispatcher granted the request. So they throw in this mention of what's called the MBTA's employee relaxation line. I don't know what that is. I Googled it. I can't find anything about it. But it's apparently, from the context here, a number on a card that they give all the MBTA employees that if you're feeling stressed, like you want to crash a train or go on a shooter, that just call the employee relaxation line. I don't know. Maybe it's a sex line. Gross. Now, a minute later, an inspector on the platform at Braintree was calling to say that the train operator, his leg injured when the train grazed him, had just climbed up from the tracks and tumbled toward his booth. The train had taken off on its own. So he gets up, he runs toward the ticket counter, and he goes, the train, radio that the train has gone. Later, investigators will learn that the control lever inside the train's cab had been held in place with a cord and rotated in a direction that caused the train to accelerate after the motorman flipped the signal bypass switch. Okay. Anyway, so they decide, they end up stopping the train by getting other trains out of its way, in front of it, of course, and then they just cut the power to the rail, the third rail, and that ended up guiding the train to a slow stop. Anyway, but if you're on that train, how are you, like, trusting them to figure that out, or are you jumping for it? I don't know. I'm jumping for it. Amazing. What's this story? One of the officers, we have an officer that has been convicted of rape. One of the women assaulted by former Oklahoma City police officer Daniel Holtzclaw said she feared for her life when he pulled her over last year and forced her to perform a sex act on him. In my mind, all I could think is he was going to shoot me. He was going to kill me. I begged, sir, don't make me do this. Don't make me do this, sir, please. You're going to shoot me. He's like, yeah, I am. Holtzclaw told her he wasn't going to shoot her, but he made her perform oral sodomy in June 2014. All I can say is I was a victim. I was traumatized. I went to therapy. I had a stroke behind this.
I was violated in June by a police officer. He stopped me on 50th and Lincoln for no reason whatsoever, pulled me over, and fondled me and did certain things to me. I was out there alone and helpless, didn't know what to do. And in my mind, all I could think that he was going to shoot me. He was going to kill me. He did things to me that I didn't think a police officer would do.
Weird. Now, is there any video evidence of this, or is this possibly just an old black lady getting all worked up for no reason? I doubt that that's the case. Here's another story. Here's another lady talking. If we can get to that one. This is still the black.
It's not.
I didn't expect for none of that to happen. And
this is the new lady.
When he approached the car, I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen next. Because me and...
Is this Shanda Green? Shanda Green Hill told reporters that Holtzclaw pulled her over in December 2013... and she was later taken to the hospital on the other side of town. Once there, Holtzclaw raped her while she was handcuffed to the hospital bed. Oh, my goodness. No nurses. Nobody came to check on me, she said. Being in the room with the police, not expecting to get violated the way I did. The way I was done. I just couldn't even believe it. I was speechless. I was scared. So we got a cop. He's been convicted on several counts of rape. He was just apparently being a cop and pulling people over and being like, hi, I would like to have you suck on my oral sodomy. For about 6 months, Holtzclaw preyed on women, all African-American, in one of Oklahoma's poorest neighborhoods, exploiting his police badge to intimidate them into keeping quiet. Prosecutors say that Oklahoma City officers selected his victims based on their criminal histories, figuring their drug or prostitution records would undermine any claims they might make against him. Well, that was kind of smart, I guess. I don't know. Then he would subject them to assaults that escalated from groping to oral to rape. On Thursday, his 29th birthday, he rocked back and forth in his chair, sobbing as the judge read his verdict. So he is going to jail. Amazon. Sorry about that. Amazon has pulled out some hoverboards. Man sues hoverboard maker after hoverboard maker Swagway over fire that damaged his home. In another black mark for the hoverboard industry, a New York man is suing.
First, some new fallout this morning regarding those hoverboards and some well-publicized incidents of them catching fire. So right in the middle of the holiday shopping season, Amazon has decided to yank most of those devices off its site. Overstock.com has dropped them all together. Natalie has more on this.
Yeah, it was supposed to be the hot gift of the holiday season, but now the Consumer Product Safety Commission is assessing the risks associated with these motorized balance boards and recognizing their popularity. The agency says the investigation is at the top of their priority list.
Suddenly, one of the hottest gifts this holiday season has turned into a product too hot to handle.
Oh, that's really funny. It's about as funny as the joke I'd make.
Some hoverboards catch fire.
Oh my goodness, Amazon, that was a video of someone in the mall.
Moving most brands from its site, and Overstock.com is no longer selling them at all. This hoverboard caught fire, causing thousands of dollars in damage.
The hoverboard ignited while it was being charged and actually rolled over to a bed and ignited the bedding in the bedroom.
Goodness. Okay, so hoverboards are catching fire. Do not buy them, and they're not available on Amazon. Let's do a Timothy Madden update real quick. A Kentucky man was indicted Friday on charges of kidnapping, raping, and killing a 7-year-old girl whose body is found in the creek. So he has gone to court, and he has been, what's it called, indicted. This was the video we played last week. This is a follow-up to Timothy Madden, the father of six or whatever that for some reason is accused. Not for some reason is accused. Well, I guess for some reason is accused, right? Anyway, the reason being he might have done it, but we don't know. Killed a little girl in the woods. Shocking video of a child smoking pot, sitting in a child's seat and wearing what appears to be a diaper. A young boy demonstrates smoking marijuana. An alarming new video that is reportedly being investigated by police. Inhale it, an adult voice is told to the child.
Please.
Oh my goodness. Let's go back. We're going to watch that again. Oh, there's a big puff of smoke at the beginning of the video.
Inhale it. Please. Wow. Let me hit that. Okay.
That was a very short video. That was only 12 seconds long. Inhale it. An adult voice is heard telling the child, whose local news in Chicago estimates is no more than 4 or 5. An anonymous tipster shared the video with Andrew Holmes, a community activist. A community activist? How do you become a community activist? I want to be one of those and have videos shared with me. Nick, look at this video. Since you're a community activist. Who said he has brought the video to authorities. I'm very worried because there's no telling how long this child has been smoking and the child may have behavioral problems later on in life. I don't know. Maybe it is the worst thing. Maybe it's the best thing. What if smoking marijuana as a child actually helps your body? There's no way to know. Okay, guys, we got to start wrapping it up. But before we do, here is our uplifting video of the day. Crazy video. Watch. Mom. A Minnesota mom scored her daughter half off next year's middle school tuition. Middle school tuition? With an amazing half-court shot. Angela Ramey won the chance to shoot for her daughter's tuition discount after helping raise the most money during Bethany's Academy food drive. So you put in hours and hours of work. You're like, I raised the most money during that food drive. I should get something. And they say, okay, fine. What you get? A chance to win half off tuition. All you have to do is make this shot from half court. Yeah, right. We'll never have to pay her. Oh my goodness! I was not expecting that. I'm gonna admit, I was not expecting how that turned out. So the ball She throws it, she throws it squat style, right? It falls way, she throws it way up in the air, right? Squat style meaning she puts it between her legs like a kettlebell and then throws it toward the hoop. It falls way short. It bounces once and then goes in. Maybe that was her goal the entire time. Let's watch it again. Oh my goodness. So there's this girl in the background that's just carting a bunch of bins. She's not even paying attention. Like everyone in the courtroom, there's two people behind her. One's carting a bunch of bins and one's packing up bins, and she's about to make a half court shot and nobody's paying attention. Anyway, I tried to make a half court shot once, didn't do it, but I didn't try to bounce it. So maybe that's the key. Oh, she's in shock. The mom's in shock. This was not her plan. This was not her plan that this would happen. Watch. You can only see this on the video version, obviously. She throws it. She goes, oh, I missed by a lot. She's like going like, oh, I missed by a lot. And then she shrugs to her daughter going, sorry. I guess I'm a horrible shot. And then it goes in and she's just in shock. She's just looking around going, does it count? Does it count? And now they're going in, now she's going insane. Okay, it's too bad you're not, if you're not watching the video version, you're missing like a crazy eyes. Yeah, she thought she completely missed and then it just bounced in by luck. That's pretty funny. That was actually better than I expected. I thought it was just going to be I didn't watch that video before the show. I thought it was just going to be like, oh, she's a pretty good shot. She made it in. That was way more exciting than I expected. All right, folks, this has been News with Nick for December 18th, 2015. It is now time to take a shower, drink some more beer, coffee, and get to work. Don't buy a hoverboard. And don't wear a bedsheet to your next class reunion. Okay? Bye.